candle to illuminate a room, to give you some light. Mm-hmm. That changes the entire structure of darkness.
So you're taking a broader view about the question on reason, the thesis. You're taking a broader view in that, in the panoply of possible outcomes in a human life or multiple human lives, you're going to have the spectrum of people who will be Machiavellian, who will be strategic, who will want to win at the expense
that
of others.
That is part of their development of their...
Correct, correct.
Of so, who they are.
And others will not like that and will want to do something else. Now, here's a question then. If that is... Let's take your thesis, actually. Your thesis is probably actually broader and more inclusive of what I've conceived of. So let's go with yours, okay? That has implications for a different outcome.
Welcome to the QR Lab. Q for questioning, R for reality, but we're also on a quest to try to understand our reality. We consider this a safe space, like you would in any lab, where you can make mistakes, you can stumble, you can trip and fall, but ultimately we're trying to get to the bottom of the experiment, trying to figure out what this is all about. But it's not so much coming to the conclusions as it is the process.
The journey.
My name is Kuldeep Tagore, and I'm here with...
Amr Zeki. How are you, man?
I'm doing very good today. Thank you.
So today...
Yes.
We're going to have probably a shorter episode, depending on how far we go with this, but I wanted to talk about what is the highest artistic creation? If you can think about what that is in life, I think it's a very open-ended question. People can look at it many ways, but I propose a thesis, okay? So I'm going to read it, and then we can discuss it.
Let's go.
What in life is the highest or greatest artistic creation? Of all the things and ways a human being can create, what is the most important to create? What is the hardest? What is the highest of all creations? The answer is simple. Look in the mirror. It is you. Yes, you. I am my biggest and most demanding project in life. What about work, the kids, family? No, not even close. Conquering the self, the jihad against the self, is the hardest and most important of all human activities. Why is this so? Why the focus on the inner when the outer world is full of so many problems? I will answer this question with another question. Who or what created all the problems in the external world in the first place? Who? After mankind conquered nature or at least found a way to live with her, what is the source of the remaining problems? The answer is very clear. The source of the ongoing catastrophes in life is largely our own making. Now, I'm going to stop here. There's a lot more I say about this, and I make some very radical claims, but I'm going to stop there, and I think in our discussion, I'll try to bring them out, okay? So the thesis here is that the highest artistic, and by artistic, I mean really self-development, right? The highest thing you can create is yourself, your character, and that is the hardest project in human life. And many people have argued for this in different ways, right? Carl Jung talks about the circumambulation to the higher self or the highest self. Who's the philosopher who talked about self-actualization? A lot of people have said this, right? This is not a completely new idea. I take it a little bit further because some of the claims that I make, even about natural disasters, an asteroid hitting Earth, may actually be our doing from a philosophical, from a spiritual or psychic standpoint. I think all bets are off, especially when you accept the fact that consciousness is the primary reality, right? That the brain doesn't necessarily produce the mind, but perhaps transduces the mind. So there are possibilities in the full scope of reality that we don't appreciate. So that is the question for today. That's the thesis. Is the self or you as a person, are you the highest artistic creation, the most important project to address? And what are the implications of doing that? And what if everybody did that? What kind of world would we have? That's the question for today.
Yeah, well, I guess it's interesting because if you take it to, the logical conclusion that somebody is trying to make the best of themselves, you could also see that there would be people that are trying to make the worst of themselves.
That is part of their...
I mean, does art always have to, coalesce to some sort of, an idea of what is right
or wrong. I mean,
yeah,
the highest form of what is right, the highest form of what is wrong.
You're bringing up an interesting question.
The lowest form of what is wrong.
What if some people are compelled to develop qualities in themselves that are actually harmful, but they believe that it's good, right? And I mean, you're never going to get away from conflict in life. But the idea is that...
Or even if they don't believe it's good, they are geared toward doing bad things, whether they...
Yeah.
You know, it's not about right or wrong. They just believe what they are doing is what they are supposed to.
Well, let's use another example.
I mean, did Hitler think he was a bad guy? Did he, you know what I'm saying?
He probably didn't think that. Otherwise, you think his consciousness would not allow him to continue to do the horrible things he did, right? But let's take it another way. Let's look at a down-to-earth example, right? Somebody who's a baker, who's running a small business, who's got a family, you know, typical suburbia. But this person has certain personal qualities. He cheats. He lies. He does false marketing, right? He doesn't give the best product possible to his customers. He fakes them out, right? He makes money, sure. But if this person looked in the mirror and accepted the fact that they were doing that and had an issue with it and decided they were going to do something about it, is that good or bad for the world?
I mean, there's not a good or bad answer to that question.
No, but what if he decided, I'm you know what, I'm going to keep cheating people versus I need to work on this and fix this problem. What's better for the world and for society?
I mean, I think it would be better for him to, it's hard to say.
Is it not better that he fixed?
But don't we need, darkness needs light? I mean, to be, I mean
you're arguing that it's okay for him to not fix the problem is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Why?
Why should he?
Because
it's part of him to be, it's part of his creative. So you're saying the highest form of creation is yourself, right? But perhaps somebody believes that doing bad things is.
Okay, so that's actually a Machiavellian perspective, which, you know, can be argued. I guess what I'm looking for is, actually, this brings up a new issue, which is the tension between individual, you know, self-centered, you know, selfish desires versus altruism,
well,
right?
Well, see, what you're saying is the highest form, right? I mean, this whole thing is about the highest form of creativity is yourself. Artistic creation is developing the self.
Correct.
So it's in the developing that's important.
Correct.
Okay,
I see what you're saying. Yeah. I guess there's a hidden implicit premise or assumption in my thought that it should orient towards good. But you're raising the point, which is more maybe on a Machiavellian spectrum.
I'm just saying it doesn't. Not everybody does orient toward good.
That's true.
Not everybody orients to the light. In fact, I would argue that, look, if things were based completely on a Gaussian bell-shaped curve, that then, okay, let's just say I'm totally average. Like,
yeah.
Between good and bad, 8 billion people on the planet.
Correct.
I'm number 4 billion. I'm right in the middle.
Okay. Okay. Right.
But that implies what? That there are 4 billion other people mm-hmm. that are worse than me.
Correct.
That's a lot of people. And what I would say is I don't think it does fall into a perfect bell-shaped curve. I think that it's very interesting, just even if you think about it in terms of light and dark. All you need is one little candle to illuminate a room, to give you some light. Mm-hmm. That changes the entire structure of darkness.
So you're taking a broader view about the question I'm raising, the thesis. So you're taking a broader view in that, in the panoply of possible outcomes in a human life or multiple human lives, you're going to have the spectrum of people who will be Machiavellian, who will be strategic, who will want to win at the expense
of
others.
That is part of their development of their...
Correct.
Of so, who they are.
And others will not like that. And we'll want to do something else. Now, here's a question then. If that is, let's take your thesis, actually. Your thesis is probably actually broader and more inclusive of what I've conceived of. So let's go with yours, okay? That has implications for a different outcome. Actually, similar to what I concluded. But the implications is what? Is that will drive human conflict. Because if... every individual is seeking their quote-unquote... Remember the power podcast where
right.
seeking power is not just about dominating people, but it's actually you're trying to bring your creative sense into the world. Well, this is an artistic creative production of the self. You will have lots of conflict because you have some people that pull in this direction, others that pull in this direction, this worldview, that worldview. And it's an explanation for one explanation for how you can actually accentuate conflict. And you're going to have people that break up into groups. So it's really unavoidable. So really, the idea that addressing issues of the self, if you look at your expanded thesis as compared to what I started with, doesn't really solve problems. It may actually accentuate problems.
Yeah. I think that we're sort of here to do that.
It can go both ways.
Even the podcast, like we've talked about how life is just messy. Even our discussions here, they may not create full arcs. We may not get to conclusions, but it's the process. And your hypothesis that the self is a creation, and that augmenting, supplementing, developing that creation is the highest form of
the artistic work you can do.
Right.
Now what you've added to it is...
But what's interesting is not what you produce necessarily,
right,
but who you are.
Your character, your internal character.
So there are many different ways to look at this. There's character, but there's also a physicality, right? Developing your... the
physical the best, strength.
The best right. physical specimen that you could be.
Muscles and
but,
you know...
So then to not fitness, do that, yeah. to not do that is...
Then you're really kind of, gosh, that's a tough one because I'm gonna have to make a judgment call. You're kind of in a way wasting the opportunity to bring to the world a better version or a more developed
but
version.
But how do we know it's better?
What I mean is developed,
right? Know? But I think that we have a concept that okay, somebody who can develop themselves physically into a like an amazing physical specimen who can run, jump, yeah, okay, fine. But really, he's just a visual specimen of muscular.
No, I mean that's one example. I mean,
right? Can he play basketball the way?
Can he
play? You know what I'm saying?
It's like an example.
There's so many manifestations of how you could develop yourself. I was going to say artistically, but that's not the right. How you could develop yourself? I guess let's just say.
I guess you can use a broader term like aesthetic, which means. Includes everything, including sports and bodybuilding and thinking and, you know, your career. But really, I think what I'm getting at is actually character. And you alluded to this earlier. It's not necessarily what you produce, like, oh, I produce a film, I produce this, whatever. It's actually the production is your human interactions, your character, how you respond when somebody insults you. Somebody is throwing garbage at the entrance to your home and your neighbor doesn't like you. Do you go and attack them, or do you quietly remove the garbage and go take them food and soup when they're feeling sick? And you actually return evil with kindness, but to what limit? What if they're breaking the door down? They want to do a home invasion. Are you going to return that with kindness? These are the implications of this, right? At what point?
Interesting. That's a really interesting example you just brought up, right? Because it gives us pause because it is outside of our normal domains of interaction. For example, most people would want retribution, right? But these higher level in the Quran or the Bible teachings that you must, it almost becomes godlike, right? The example I'm thinking of is when Jesus says, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. Like everybody is there to castigate and accuse this person of wrongdoing. We're there to make an example. And Christ steps in and goes, look at yourself first.
Don't be a hypocrite, right?
Right. Like, yeah. Look at yourself. Look at what you're doing. Let this person go. It's
show mercy.
It stuns people into, you know, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think mercy, and, you know, you've spoken a lot
mercy.
About
yeah.
how mercy is, that concept of mercy is referred to in the Quran.
It's very hard for human beings to show mercy. You know, there's a phrase in the Quran that says...
Is that why it's like considered to be like the...
I think it's higher. Because here's
Is it higher or is it weaker?
It's not weaker.
No, I'm just asking questions.
I'll tell you what.
That's what we're here to do. Just ask questions.
Dude, I've thought a lot about this because it would take more strength from me to show mercy than to show vengeance and justice. I would have to restrain my... So
for you, acting out with retribution,
vengeance, anger comes
naturally.
Let's say it's easy.
So yeah. Going against our nature
is rising above.
So developing your nature, what you're saying right. is, I am the greatest artistic project is me, right?
Correct.
I mean, essentially the thesis
Correct.
Here, right? Like, I'm the greatest artistic project. And what am I going to do? How am I going to Well, am I going to take it to a higher level and actually change my nature? Is that how we, my quote unquote nature?
Now you're talking. See, now you're getting to the deepest, most sensitive core. Somebody turns to you in an argument and just insults your character. Do you pause, look at them, and then walk away? Or do you strike back with even a worse comment or a look? So,
but there's so many levels of creation within just that one interaction you described. Like, so many people could handle that so many different ways. And some people you go, wow, the way you handled that with that sarcasm was amazing. Way you handled that with mercy, amazing.
Okay, now it goes to another level. The person insults you. You don't say anything. Then they punch you in the face. Okay, now what do you do?
Turn the other cheek.
Not necessarily, but I'm going to make an example. In the Quran, it says, show mercy, for God is merciful and loves those who show mercy. Be merciful, right? So, but I think there's a limit to that. So they hit you in the face. You get angry. You have this physical animalistic reaction that you want to strike back, but you restrain yourself. Why? And you restrain yourself and you look at the person and you say, I forgive you for what you have done. And you walk away. Now, guess what that person is going to feel? They're going to feel a level of deflation and shame because of what they did.
You have put it back in their face.
Exactly.
You have put the mirror up.
That's
right.
You
have taken their blows. Like right now, what we're talking about is the teachings of Mahatma Gandhi.
All the prophets have said this, by the way.
Correct.
They all say the same thing. So
but what was interesting, though, I'm sorry to interrupt,
yeah.
but you know, this is a messy environment. It was interesting to me that you said there are limits to mercy because in the Quran, it says that obviously God is the most merciful.
God is also described as
No limits to mercy.
Well, God is also God. Right. Sorry to, I didn't mean to interrupt, but we may have talked about this before. God has 99 names and qualities, of which one of them is the destroyer and one of them is the abaser, meaning you'll be abased, which is interesting, but he wants you to know him not as the destroyer, but the opening to each chapter in the Quran is Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of the merciful, the most merciful, or the gracious and the merciful. So he's taken his 99 qualities, some of which are the king, the majestic, the all-knowing, the all-seeing. No. He wants to be known as the mercy, the most merciful. In the name of, not the destroyer, not the king, not the all-knowing, not the omnipotent, but the merciful. He wants to be known as mercy. And if you think about what reality is and what life is and the level of injustices that we commit in our lives, if this was a God who was a God of retribution, atom for atom, we would be annihilated very quickly in life. Nothing would last. Because if this God enacted the justice that counts atom by atom, all of humanity would be wiped out, would have been wiped out a long time ago. Because if that's what he wants, that's what he would have done. Or whatever the nature of reality is, whatever the retribution is, even if you don't believe in God. Karma, call it. But this is a creator of mercy that gives room and space and time for reflection and for achieving your highest artistic self before you die and move on to the next development phase. That's why this is an important thing.
And how do we keep building ourselves? It's self-reflection. Is it kind of what we're doing here?
You need time alone.
I mean, you have to reflect. The first part is this. We have agreed that there is something like a nature to people, right?
Yes.
We see it in our kids at a very early age. If you've had children,
that's right.
You'll say, oh, his nature was very calm and peaceful as a child. Like even as a baby, very calm and peaceful. Whereas this one, oh, he was wild. He was, we had to put a harness on him. And this one was... Wow, he was very, aloof in his own. It seems like people are born
with certain personality
and
traits.
And now they're raised, right? So Correct. Environment versus
exactly.
Nature versus nurture here. Yeah. So there clearly is a nurturing aspect to human development. So as people go through these, and again, I'll hearken back to Erickson, who starts with, well, how do people, they go through these stages. The very first stage is trust versus mistrust.
The seven stages you're saying, yeah.
Of Erickson's
self-development.
Psychosocial development explained, right? Yeah. Like the idea is if as a child, as a baby, you're not tended to, then you learn to not trust your environment.
You feel abandoned.
Right. Yeah. And in fact, it becomes difficult to go from one stage and advance to the next stage if you haven't really conquered, at least, you know,
absolutely,
dealt with it to some degree.
It's a kind of arrested development, actually.
Right. So you can't go to the next stage of autonomy versus doubt, where you start to, and you see this in like 3, 4, 5 year olds, right? Like where they're want to be very autonomous. But if there's always doubt, they can never advance to the next stage, which would be initiative versus guilt. You know, so it goes on and on like this until people get to a certain point of development, right? So there has to be these stages. And I think to some degree, like for example, the very first stage, trust versus mistrust, has to be settled. Like there may be some mistrust there, but it needs to be quote unquote settled. You have to be able to trust that what is going to happen. Otherwise you're always going to be just circling. I think that a lot of people are in that stage. Mm-hmm. And developing yourself, I keep wanting to say developing yourself creatively, but actually it's creatively developing yourself.
Yeah,
it's kind of what you're talking about.
It's
here.
It's actually both, because you know, you can live life in an engaged manner, or you could be a drone, a zombie. We've talked about this, right? Think about every moment you're awake. What's happening? Your mind is buzzing with random thoughts. Oh, I got to do this. I got to do this. There is levels of perception. There's your subconscious mind, which is active. There's the 5% conscious mind, which is active. You have all these impulses. You have physical impulses. You have psychological impulses. You have emotional inputs and outputs and impulses. There's a litany of things happening all throughout the day. The question you ask yourself is, at the end of the day, what percent of my day did I pay attention to and reflect on? And what percent was devoted to self, true self-development? Meaning that person who insulted you, did you feel kind of a retribution in your heart and you wanted to get back at them? Or did you say, this person is having a bad day, I'm going to forgive them and let this go, you know? Or the person who punched you in the face, did you show mercy and walk away? And by the way, you know you could destroy them. You know you could hit 10 times harder. But because you're virtuous, you keep that sword sheathed and you walk away. Because you're more afraid of yourself than you are of your opponent. And that is a sign of a true virtuous person, a hero. So the person who shows mercy is a kind of hero. Now, what kind of world would we have?
The meek shall inherit.
Yeah, what kind of world would we have if everybody was reflecting on these things and was teaching one another and teaching themselves? You know, well, we've all made these mistakes, right? But it's the ego, the left brain, the ego, the reptile part of you that wants to be the animal. And we are not just animals.
But we still, you know, okay, so I have so many thoughts going on in my head right now, because this is such an interesting idea. So here, let me just give you the example of somebody who has developed themselves to be a master of death. They've learned the art of killing. Like, say, an assassin.
Ted Bundy.
No, okay, so yeah, there definitely is that. Let's just say somebody who, let's think of some of these people from art fiction or from, you know, stories like new, you know, movie that just came out, Equalizer 3, Denzel Washington. He plays this role where he is essentially a master of death.
He's a killer.
He can do it, you know, efficiently, expeditiously, and actually this
artistically.
Almost like, yeah, no, right?
Artistically, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, that's how the movie's conveyed, yeah.
Interesting. So
that gets back to your earlier point. That's a development of a person, but it's on the dark side, right?
It is the dark side, but in the context of this film, The Equalizer, he's doing it for
justice, right?
For justice. He is, that's what the whole term is, right?
He's more than justice.
He's an equalizer,
he's
right?
A vengeance.
There are people out there, the darkness is out there. You just need a little light to equalize things so that we can see, so it doesn't take much, really, right? I don't know exactly where I'm going with that.
This is a difficult concept because...
It is. I'm trying to wrap my head around the idea that somebody can try to develop their sense of morality and doing the right thing and arc toward justice, arc toward, let's just say, you know, for lack of a better term, God, like the most purest and, but I see, I would suggest that there's a duality there, even with arcing to quote unquote God. God is not just.
I agree. Because sometimes when the dragon is at the door, or as we learned in True Detective, when the bad men at the door, you need other bad men to stop them from entering, right? So that's why I said there's a limit to mercy. The limit is this.
It's a human limit.
I'll tell you what it is, exactly. If somebody's breaking down your door and doing a home invasion and wants to kill your family, turning the other cheek is not going to do anything.
Well, maybe there, though, your mercy is toward your family. Action there is...
Or here's another...
Because this person is about to, you know, do horrible things to your family, so
right.
The mercy now has shifted toward... You're not going to show mercy to the offender. You're showing mercy to the...
Actually, you might, and here's how.
You could. You could not kill them, but you could stop
right.
them.
So, right. Or the way you kill them could be merciful. Or you don't do any harm more than what they've done to you. Meaning if they start to leave, you don't shoot them in the back. If you capture them, you don't torture them. You call the police to arrest them, right? You don't exercise a level of vengeance.
You know how in the film, The Equalizer, how mercy is conveyed? It's conveyed prior to the violence. I'm going to give you mercy now.
Take it or leave it.
What is going to come... There will be no mercy after that, right?
Like, he's showing mercy.
He does every time. He goes, "You have 7 seconds to make up your decision." Like, right?
Walk away.
He sets his watch and he says, "You have 7 seconds."
He's always playing with his watch, man.
Yeah,
that's so funny.
You have 7 seconds to decide your fate. This is mercy.
That's right.
Because he can.
It's a warning.
He can end your entire. You think you're so high and mighty? He's going to end it all. He is going to bring down. "Quote unquote God's wrath." That I think there's something about, like, the film is enormously successful, and I think it's enormously successful because conceptually we all really feel this.
We want justice.
We do.
At the same time, we want mercy. So this is what I'm talking about: what is the balance? Okay, so let's get into the next chapter. You're correct. I agree. Really, there's a tension between the two. So the question is: you really don't know what you would do until you're in that scenario. And let me tell you, because I'm worried I could be in these scenarios, I do all kinds of mental simulations of what I would do. That's why I like TV shows like The Walking Dead and these. I've always gravitated towards disaster survival type shows because I see myself, if I was in that situation and I was formed, I was faced with a moral dilemma, how would I actually act? What kind of road would I take? And the conclusion I came to is the following. I can be capable of immense mercy, but of immense justice and vengeance.
Right.
I'm capable of both. So the trick for me is, when do I deploy one or the other? And that's called, as Jiddu Krishnamurti calls, right action. What is the right action? I would argue the right action depends on the context and also depends on how well developed you are. Because if you're not well developed in your virtue, you won't take the right action. So it is incumbent upon us to go through these simulations so that we are prepared to take the right action. And whether you become a hero and slay the dragon, which is not mercy, or you turn the other cheek and you show mercy, depends. And the question is, even your depends can be just. Even your depends can be merciful. So there's meta levels. Meta. So this is the challenge.
I mean, we, you know, in these films, they show... A bad guy who might be, it's almost like I think it's much more interesting when they depict villains as ambiguous, right? Like their motivations for doing something are actually good, but they're going about it.
Well, they have redeeming qualities.
Like the Thanos character in Infinity War.
That's right.
Right? Or some of the more recent Bond villains. They actually have quite lofty ideals. They actually want to save humanity, right? They actually want to save people by killing them.
Their method is not good. And they'll show, for example, like they had a bad childhood where they were, you know, chain handcuffed to the heater for, you know, 13 days and they were starving. So they show a trauma which kind of messed up their psychology. They're trying to achieve a higher goal, but they're doing it in very evil, bad means. But they think it's good. And they're willing to, quote-unquote, sacrifice people to achieve, you know, their ends.
See, because the arc and where I'm going with this, is this. Batman doesn't kill people.
No.
Superman doesn't kill people, but the Equalizer does.
Right.
Okay. You said, or what we're discussing here, is that people themselves are their own greatest artistic creation.
They
right?
may not and be, though. They may be in development, or they may be poorly developed.
But
different stages.
Read the very first. Can you read the very first sentence again? Read this again.
What in life is the highest or greatest artistic creation?
Oh, you.
Right.
Right. That's what you said.
Right.
What is the highest?
What is the highest thing you could put your effort into produce in life?
Is yourself.
Correct. Because even, by the way, if you have children.
But what if I believe that, doing that is becoming a mass murderer? That would be the, just imagine this person, Ted Bundy.
But you'll be opposed.
Hitler.
You'll be opposed.
Okay.
Because
But still, in this argument, it would be like, you have to do it.
Well,
irrespective of the outcome of whether it's a good thing, bad thing, how it's going to affect society.
Correct.
If the highest form.
Well, that's why we have concepts of good and evil and things like that. You know, we have these concepts because there are people who will oppose those ideas. Let's say, for example, you want to enslave everybody in this city. You want to, you know, and you don't care if they're good or bad or they've done harm to you. Well, we consider that kind of an evil, right? So if a person wants to develop themselves into someone who's nefarious, they can do that, but they will be opposed. And the people who want to develop higher benevolent qualities will be opposed by Machiavellian type people who have malevolent impulses. So this is, again, goes back to the shadow.
So
dark and light.
The thing about this comment that the highest or greatest creation is yourself, but it really depends on when you say yourself, are you arcing toward goodness? Or are you arcing toward
this is your thesis, which is expanded. Actually, I did not at all include the dark side in this, and I should have. So, because remember, this is a very short entry, and I am biased in my thinking. Your thesis is much better, and it's much broader than what I wrote and thought about, because you're including a much larger aspect of human life, which includes the darkness. And I think your thesis is actually better, and this should be amended to include that. Because it makes it much more complex and much more akin to actually reality. Because not everybody's going to want to orient towards the highest good of themselves or just virtue, or they want to be better. Some actually, their better is being worse. Right?
I mean, Jung talked about the shadow self.
He talked about incorporating it. He didn't say to obey it. He said incorporate it.
That's right.
So there's a difference between that.
But just the idea that there is a shadow, that there is something.
Well, of course there is. I mean, by the way, I can't wait till Napoleon comes out. Napoleon is going to be quite a film. We're going to have to see that.
Oh, for sure.
That's an interesting character. But anyway,
we'll see if they can do him and if they can portray him in a way that captures the.
He was the
historical truth of him. Yeah. I mean, please let's not get all heroic here. And
he's a military genius.
He's a military butcher.
He was exactly. But he was the way he do you know what he would do with information? He was like a living computer. He had spies and he had lieutenants and people giving him information. They would come in with notes, and there is descriptions of him sitting in his office with massive manuscripts and reports and maps like scattered on the walls, on the ceiling, on the floor, and he's sitting in the middle of it. He's saying, he reads that note and that information. He's reading that, and he looks at everything and he makes a decision based on massive, massive input of information. And he comes up with, we have to divide up our forces and create the appearance that there are five armies instead of one. We'll fake them out. We'll come from this angle and this angle. And the enemy thinks, oh my God, they have an army 500,000. No, the army's only like 20,000 people or whatever. You know, so this is what he did.
So Napoleon's greatest creation was himself, developing himself into being a military conqueror.
Correct.
So I think in the end here, when we talk about what's interesting is, you know, the arc toward saying developing yourself to create the greatest good. That's not necessarily.
That's my bias, right?
That's a bias,
correct.
Right? Because at least for some people in their nature, it would be not producing things that are not great. Like, let's just say Oppenheimer, who, you know, essentially put all his efforts, all his creative endeavors, his highest form of himself, when he was at his peak of his powers, he organizes people in a way to create the most deadly weapon that Earth has ever known.
That's right.
Right?
You're right. So
was that a good thing that he did?
Well,
it doesn't matter because he was fulfilling the...
I think it does matter. So I think...
No, but do you see why I'm saying it does?
Of course.
Because
I
think you need both. I think people are so multi... Like you're saying, I'm taking into account the whole...
You are. I mean, it's not that you need both. You must have both because that's reality.
Right. There's no way for us to understand.
Correct.
Like a Mahatma Gandhi. I almost call him Gandhi. Well,
I mean, Gandhi.
Sorry to my people.
Man, Gandhi. Get a gander in that Gandhi.
Mahatma Gandhi versus Hitler.
This is actually, you've really expanded this into much broader than what I conceived because it actually makes me think about the gripes that Friedrich Nietzsche had with earlier philosophers, including Kant. You know, he started out loving Kant and then he started hating Kant. And
he was like, I just can't.
Yeah. I just can't do it. Hello. That's Hans Zimmer for you. But God, we have too many pop references that are going to confuse the audience, but inside jokes. But anyway, he basically dispensed, you know, he's like, Friedrich Nietzsche started hating Plato and Socrates. He's like, those guys are losers. And he was like ripping on them. And it was hard at the time, his contemporaries, to debate him because he was a genius in literature. Like, he knew and read everything. By the age of 26, he was already a full professor. Like, in Germany, and they're hardcore there. They gave him a full professorship. I don't know the exact age, but it was like in his 20s or 30s. So, and he basically wanted the pre-Athenian or the pre-Socrates culture, which was very much into, you know, sensuality and following your animal instincts and eroticism and heroic, you know, the man who goes to war for glory. He wanted that. He thought that was the best way to exist as a human being. And he basically went
to follow your impulses,
to follow
your natural impulses.
100%. Because the reason, forgive me for those Friedrich Nietzsche, you know, philosophy experts, but this is what I understand. Because he felt that the greatest manifestation of man is to follow all his impulses. And that you can become truly great.
At least you are truly authentic.
That's what he's getting at. Because
there is an element of, I think, human being who basically fake it till you make it. Like, you're not really moralistically that good, but you try to fake looking like that.
That's right.
Fake morality. You try to act like you're a very upright moral, and that's where you get hypocrisy.
That's right.
People preaching, oh, thou shalt not sleep with your neighbor's wife, except I'm going to tonight.
But the thing about it is, actually, it's interesting. Authenticity, like in a person, even if you disagree with them, even if they're your enemy, even if they have some bad qualities, but when they're authentic, that is the highest, most synchronous state that person could ever express, even more powerful than love.
I mean, I think when people say, oh, Hitler was a genius, I think what they are getting at is what we're talking about here is that, no, I don't like what he did. But if you look at his highest or greatest creation of himself, it's quite substantial what he did. I mean,
that's
it's he something organized. To be reckoned with.
Well, he was, I mean, what he did.
And people, like you said, it's going to be judged.
Correct.
And it will be opposed.
People are afraid of it until today. I mean, our intelligence agencies...
But I think we are meant to. I think we are meant to... And when I say we, I'm talking about all human beings. We are meant to be Hitlers. We're meant to be Gandhis. We're meant to be...
I mean,
and that we must interact with each other and work this out. I think this...
I'm not sure you're meant to be. I don't know if I'd agree that you're meant to be Genghis Khan and kill, you know, 80 million people.
Then why did it happen? Because it was meant to be.
Well, you're actually
If it happened, it was meant to be.
So you're actually getting at probably the most philosophically challenging and deep question there actually is. And I think it's way more challenging than consciousness. Consciousness has been solved, listeners. Sorry, I sound...
Listen to our last podcast.
I mean,
no, I'm just, it's arrogant to say that. But I think that we've come to a point where we maybe agree and we're looking, you know, to...
This is the lab.
This is a safe place. So there are no final conclusions here, but it seems to us that there is a distinction between the mind... and the brain, and that the brain, as you have said, is an organic physical structure. The mind is not. And the brain does not produce the mind, but is a transducer of the mind.
This is the previous discussion we had, correct?
Right, but it's important to just, I just wanted to reiterate it moving forward for the rest of this.
Yes, week. Because it does have implications actually for what you just said.
Yeah.
What you just said is kind of a mind explosion, because when you said, oh, yeah, these horrible murders, they did it. They did it and it was allowed. Well, who allowed it if God is running and manifesting and instantaneously creating every subatomic particle? That means it is being allowed to manifest. It is not being stopped.
It shouldn't be stopped.
Well, hold on. Don't say should, because should has
That's
bias.
Hard. It's hard. It's so
just,
hard.
Just listen.
Words are tough.
If, okay, this is getting into something that we really can't get into right now, because it's a bit difficult, but this gets back to, okay, we have not talked about motion. Okay, the listeners right now are going to be like, what is he talking about? What is he talking about motion? Okay, motion,
space. Don't worry about the listeners. I don't know what you're talking about.
Motion, space, and time, and instantaneous creation. If you're going to invoke that there is God that has created or is creating everything, raises a problem when you see manifest massive evil. That means if every subatomic particle is instantaneously being allowed to exist or is being created, and we'll get to that in another podcast, but let's take it at face value. That means the creator is allowing these things to happen, even though he does not want them to happen. This creates a certain dilemma that you have to contend with as a human being. He doesn't want them to happen, but it's being allowed for some reason. And you know why it's being allowed? Because it is a test of your soul and your character. And you're being tested. And you have the option to do it or not do it. And you have the will to do it or not do it. He doesn't want it, but you're doing it. And there will be consequences. Karma. Adam for Adam.
Yeah. Well, you know, anytime we talk about, you know, God or anything, I feel you're going to lose people, because when we refer to this, we really are referring to him with, like, it's very obvious we're referring to him with human characteristics, as if he is somebody who would test something. Like, that we're so important that it would need to be tested.
But hold on, are we
that important? Like, I think that human beings have a bias toward creating a God in their own image.
I don't think human beings can or have to create a God. It's something that is inevitable when you think about everything.
Yeah, I try not to think of this as, you know, human beings creating gods or gods creating us. Like, I think it's just, it all is. Like, the idea would be, like, out of, you know, there's a kind of a metaphysical Christian group called Unity. And the idea there is that it's all God, all the time. And it's all good.
Okay, there is a perspective on this. Yes.
So, for example, a murderer is coming into your house and he's going to kill you. Well, you know, there's no division here that, oh, that's the devil doing that, and here's God over here.
They're
playing this as if, like, you know, the sun and the moon are opposed. It's not like that. It's all God. It's all good, and it's happening all the time. We cannot see the pattern of the grand design, because we're just threads in the tapestry.
But is torture of an innocent person before they're killed good?
See, we're putting a qualitative judgment on good and bad. Like, who knows?
Okay,
maybe it was meant to be.
Hold on.
See, again, I'm going earlier, with meant and should. And
No. I'm gonna challenge you on this. Earlier, you said suffering is evil. Now, I sit you down in a chair and I start chopping your body parts off while you're still alive. I'm torturing you.
Right.
And you're screaming and crying in pain. Is that good? You said it's all good and all God. I'm going to say no. I'm going to challenge that.
Right.
Because you just said that's suffering and that's evil. So now you've contradicted yourself.
Well, what I'm saying is that is maybe part of God's plan.
No, God is not evil. That's a massive contradiction.
Well, how do you know?
Because. I mean,
you see,
it's self-evident.
See, the idea that there's a devil that's outside of God is purely designed so that we can pick sides. Like, we need sides. we have to take a side. Like, it's very difficult.
It is very difficult
for people to be to see. It's very difficult for people to think that when something, how do I say this? Like, it's very difficult for people to believe in a God who's actually doing bad things. Like, at least from their perspective, or causing suffering, or but the suffering is part of God.
I think to a degree is what I guess what I'm saying.
Dude,
is,
how did we get on this?
No.
We're in trouble.
Well, this is what happens when you start thinking. I think. That's what happens. That's why people don't do it, because
you get in trouble.
Because it's hard. It's hard.
The lab is a dangerous place. Turns out.
It is.
Experiments can blow up in your face.
Well, you call it a safe space. I don't think it's a safe space. I think it's dangerous. We're
trying to make it safe so that we can explore ideas. But
when I pull the rug out from under you or under myself,
it feels unsafe.
Then all of a sudden you're like, nothing that I know makes it. So. But this is why it's important. Get used to being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And get used to uncertainty. Because that is the only pathway to truth. That's the only path. And what's involved in questioning? Uncertainty. So you know what? Welcome to being a human being. Okay?
It's all uncertain.
And all they want to teach you in school is certainty. When in fact what they should be teaching you is uncertainty.
But Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. So I want to go back to this just one more time. Wrap my head around this. The equalizer. Right? It's somebody who is utilizing his shadow self. He's a good person. He likes community. He likes people. He wants to help them. When he sees a woman being attacked, or a woman and a child being attacked by some ruthless thugs in the street, he doesn't sit back and go, well, that's just God doing God things.
Exactly.
He says, no.
I'm going to set it right.
I'm going to set this right.
So where
does
that come from? That I want to set it right. Yeah. Where does that? This is what you're getting at.
It is what I'm getting
what
at.
What is happening here? And I'll tell you.
Tell me.
Our nature is of a certain kind. We don't like to be killed or taken advantage of or having our stuff stolen. Our natural instinct is to not allow that to happen. Even if you and I grew up on an isolated island where we had no God, no religion, nothing. All we had was the earth, the water, the sky. And I came and I stole your little eggs or from your farm, I stole your apples or whatever. You would be unhappy about it. You don't need a God to come tell you that's wrong. You'd come to me and say, why are you stealing my food? And if I don't respond properly, we'll go to war. Because you feel I've committed an injustice. That is our nature. That is our nature.
To minimize the suffering. You know why? Because like the Buddha said, it's all suffering.
Exactly.
So, okay. So let's back up here. Because I'm all confused. I'm more confused.
You know
than
what
I've
I say? You know what I say? Good.
Good.
Because right.
I'm very uncertain. I feel very uncomfortable
right
now.
Right after that comes certainty.
Okay. So let's look at this again. I said, because I believe this, I believe that trying to minimize suffering is probably one of the most important things we can do. Because if somebody is suffering, we want to alleviate that. So I'm a physician, for
God's
sake. I'm trying to help people not suffer.
You're a healer.
I'm trying to see what I can do, what knowledge I have, what can I bring to you to try to heal, right?
Right.
So to alleviate some suffering. But at the same time, I'm talking about... You know, that it's all God all the time. So, and it's all good. So suffering is...
I would be careful with that idea. I'm not so sure. I would have to think a little deeper about your statement.
I think that we cannot qualify suffering as one thing or another. It just is, right? Can we say that? Do we have to assign good and bad, evil and...
I would assign it. I'll tell you why. Because I believe there are levels of suffering and gradations and species. Because... some suffering is actually good for you because you need it to grow. Because you don't have the insights to figure it out on your own, so something happens in your life and you have to learn from it, and you grow. But other kinds of suffering is malevolent and nefarious.
Right. So there are levels to suffering.
Absolutely, and there's shades of it.
There's shades.
So if I take you and I make you
and
suffer...
And so we want to minimize that as much as we can.
Hold on. I'm your father, and you're not doing well, and I deprive you, and I make you suffer... You want a new iPhone, I make you wait for it for a year. And you're suffering because you want a new iPhone, right? What am I? I'm teaching you positive lessons. So the suffering that you feel in the end builds you into a better man.
Okay.
But if I take you and I beat you and I break your arm and I abuse you, I'm destroying your soul. That is an evil and malevolent kind of suffering. There's different kinds of suffering.
But it's all suffering.
But God allows for the suffering that's good for you.
No, it's all suffering. He allows...
Well, I think that's a point.
What we're trying to do here is try to minimize the suffering, right? Like try to make it as tolerable as we can because the life can be better. It doesn't have to be
correct.
Miserable. We don't have to be
that's right.
looking for our next meal all the time. We can we can minimize this by working together, collaborating.
Exactly.
And then we sort of call that
that's right
good. We sort of, and then we attach a whole set of
right.
laws or you know, ethics, morality,
codes.
We assign right. these things because they give us structure.
Exactly.
They give us something to latch on to.
What does this say? Getting back to the beginning, yeah. the highest artistic creation ultimately leads to a better society. Because let's say even the person who wants to conduct bad,
yeah.
Here's
There'll
what
be an interplay. It won't be hidden.
But,
it'll be brought out.
What you say is this, you know what? You want to do that. We feel as a majority that that's harmful to us. So we're going to prosecute you in court.
So like Jung was talking about the shadow. Don't you think that that's what's happening? We are, some people's shadow self comes to full fruition, but it needs to in order for us to see the
to rise to a higher level.
Right.
Yeah.
So we need this interaction. We need people to be...
We're not good
I
enough.
I keep using words like need and should.
We're
and
not...
That's probably not the right words okay. to use. I need to have a better...
I agree with you in a sense. We as creatures are not good enough to just be good and rise to higher levels. Sometimes we need to suffer. Sometimes bad things need to happen in order for us to, you know, wake up and evolve. So sometimes to do good, you actually need to have a little shadow inside of you. Because let's say somebody is a hero. Let's say your village is under attack. The Romans are coming and you're a Germanic tribe. And they will come and wipe you out. Okay? You either kneel, right? Just like in Game of Thrones, bend the knee or you'll be wiped out. Now, you need some men who are willing to die and fight for your freedom so that
so
you're
that's
not,
where these virtues come from. Courage.
And those
sacrifice.
But think about it. Those men have to use extreme violence to protect. Meaning, what are they going to do? Imagine if I gave you a sword right now and I said, go chop this person in battle.
Go torture them.
No. If I give you a sword and I said, engage in battle, you're going to have a hard time cutting that person down. Because you're going to feel your sword go through their flesh, break their clavicular bone, chop their neck in half. Are you going to be able to do that? Do you realize the violence that's involved in actually being
right.
a hero? I mean, look at Hollywood. Look at all these Marvels.
Yeah, they
all commit violence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But what are they? We accept it because we think, oh, they're protecting the Earth. There's all these alien invaders, but they're killing other beings, right? So here's the paradox. There are set limits and rules to engaging in violence, and that's what real virtue is. Is you know when to sheath the sword and when to unsheath it. There's regulation.
It's a moving target, but yes, at least there is regulation, right?
And part of developing yourself is to know when to regulate it.
Because you might be like, well, though, this guy really does deserve this horrific thing, and then this person...
Okay, we're a village, and we're 100 people, 50 men. Who are you going to send into battle? Are you going to take the men who are willing to die and willing to cut down the enemy, or are you going to send men who are afraid to hold the sword? Who are you going to send into battle?
Yeah, I'll take the...
You're going to take the
I'll
guys...
I'll take the warriors.
And what does warrior mean?
I'll take the Marines.
It means they are willing to what?
Kill.
Exactly. Now, people don't want to use those words. People want to whitewash and they want to sugarcoat everything. But the reality is this. To conduct life on Earth, you're going to have to be willing to do these things at times. Not as an offensive action, as a defensive action. Right? Don't go invading other people and doing other things. Although some people would argue that's okay. Some people actually argue that. I don't. But if it's coming at you, there's going to be a time you're going to have to fight back.
In John Krakauer's book, Where Men Win Glory, he talks about the culture of the Rangers and the Marines.
Oh, you mentioned that
it's
book.
It's a great
me.
Book.
Yeah.
It's a must read. And you know, the surprising thing is that the soldiers, the infantry, want to kill. They're excited to do that. That they are looking, but they don't want to kill, you know, people in their own community, like a Ted Bundy. They want to go and kill, quote unquote, the bad guys. They want to go out with purpose and commit this horrific act of death, murder, killing somebody. So it's interesting how we glorify that in our society. We make it something noble or higher, something to almost like praise. Thank God for our military who went and killed all
our
these
heroes,
people.
Right?
Our heroes who went and fought the fight, you know?
This is the contradiction I'm talking about.
It is.
It's a contradiction because they are committing unbelievable acts of violence, but you consider it heroic and good. You consider it good. Now, this is why, this is essentially the reason why you have to be very careful about your thoughts and very careful about what you believe or don't believe and very careful about what is the right action. Because what if you are faced with that decision? What if your children are faced with that decision? What are you going to do, right? That is really the question. So to have these simulations in your mind, if I'm in that situation, what is the right action? What would I conceive of as a litany of possibilities of what I would do or not do, right? And it's good to actually have run through that in your mind. It's a kind of practice.
Right.
Because when you're faced with that, you're going to have an automatic response that's not just primal and physiologic and animalistic. You're going to have the higher order human. The cortical regions are going to be activated, right?
So the reflection is what is needed in order to create the highest best version of yourself.
And you know, that highest creation...
You have to reflect.
Not just reflect. You have to then... take reflection and act upon it.
Correct.
And reflection alone does no good.
Right. It's just that's
you have to say, you know what?
No, but the reflection allows that.
Oh, there is
it's the bridge correct.
There is no proper action without reflection.
What we're doing here, this reflection. So what we're doing here is really in this, that's the most important thing we can do as human beings.
I mean, I'll tell you right
not
now.
Not to self-aggrandize ourselves.
No. Here, I mean, I'll tell you, like right now, what I'm doing is every action and everything that I say and think, I'm really
evaluating it.
I'm taking account of it.
Yeah.
Like sometimes you'll have a thought and you say, you know what? I don't like that thought because it's leading me to a place I don't want to be.
But you have to explore it.
Well,
you have to explore your urges and your impulses and your
temptations. Let's say somebody does something. Let's say your kids screw up and they burn half the house down. You're going to have an angry impulse because let's say they were being, inconsiderate or they're being totally bad judgment and they're playing with fire and they burn half the house down. Now there is a spectrum of responses that you can have. And you think about that. What is the proper response? What is the right action so that these children understand and gain the most out of that experience?
And it's not always to get angry.
In fact, that's the last thing that
it
you
probably
should
do. Be the last thing.
It should be avoided at all costs because they're already feeling horrible. And you will turn that moment of suffering into pure hell. And if you don't accept that you are the bringer of hell to some people, then you don't understand the malevolence that you're capable of. So here's what it comes down to. Avoid anger. Take the higher road. Show mercy. Be loving. Because with your children in that context, it's appropriate.
Yeah.
But if somebody came and did that on purpose, you might take a different tact. And that's what I mean, that there are conditions and limits and it depends. Now we can end the podcast.
Okay. Thank you for allowing us to end the podcast. I also want to just point out
we're running out of time.
Okay, gotcha. You know, Coco Gauff recently said something very interesting when she won the US Open, her first Grand Slam, age 19.
Wow.
She said, you know, some of you who thought you were pouring water on my fire, you were just pouring gasoline.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful phrase. Now you can end the podcast. Now you can end it.
But I think the reason that's important is because...
And they're both transparent, so you can't really tell.
You need people like me.
Yeah, you need naysayers.
You need them.
You point your fingers.
It's not trying to get people to behave in one way or another. Develop yourself. Reflect. Think about it.
In all environments.
And you know what? If you want to go and do and be a naysayer or throw water on my... You're not going to be throwing water on my fire. You're going to be throwing gasoline.
Boom.
All right.
That's beautiful, man. Hit it.
So we went really off the...
OTC.
OTC. All right. Like, subscribe.
Comment.
Get involved. This is important stuff. In fact, might be the only thing that's important. So, peace out.
The QR Lab. We want to emphasize that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely our own, and they do not reflect the official policies or positions of our employers and places of employment or any of their affiliates. Additionally, our discussions on this podcast should not be considered professional advice or endorsements of any particular organizations, products, or individuals. We're here to share our thoughts and stimulate conversation, but we encourage you to do your own research and form your own opinions.